cases, Michael Baxendale versus the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, 2007, 71-52, Copeland.
Yeah, this clerk and attorney, Mr. Baxendale. Mr. Baxendale appeals the decision of the Veterans Court asserting that the Veterans Court did not correctly interpret 48 CFR 3.103A, which involves the VA's regulatory imposition of its duty to assist as contemplated by Congress in assisting veterans in the development of facts pertinent to their claim.
What's the interpretation here? Isn't it a question of fact whether the physical examination is necessary?
No, Your Honor. The issue presented to the Veterans Court was a question of whether or not the court was or failed to consider and apply 5110B2 in assigning an effective date. In furtherance of that argument, Mr. Baxendale, before the Veterans Court, specifically relied upon the provisions of 38 CFR 3.103 parens A, and the court simply ignored that in its decision and gave a broad, sweeping conclusion that the appellant had overstated the duty to assist and relies upon the obligation of the VA to obtain certain records and relies specifically on the interpretation of the statute.
Is this a duty to assist question, or was this really a question under 5103AD, whether medical examination was necessary?
It's a duty to assist question, Your Honor, because it goes to the heart of the meaning of the VA's duty to assist when the VA, by regulation, indicates that it has an obligation to develop facts pertinent to the claim. And the unique circumstances of this case are what happens after the VA decides that there is an entitlement to increased compensation.
There isn't a medical examination issue, right?
No, I'm raising a duty to assist issue, and a specific request for assistance is a retrospective examination.
Medical examination, and there's a specific provision in the statute which defines when a medical examination is necessary.
And the statute is in conflict with the regulation. The statute is narrow, and the regulation is broad. And the question here.
Would you just say the statute is in conflict with the regulation? No, you didn't mean it.
It is to the extent of the limitation that it imposes on the duty to obtain a medical opinion.
So, what is the legal question again here, and how would you like that legal question answered? I'm having a hard time really seeing what the legal question.
The legal question is whether or not the VA has a duty to develop facts pertinent to a claim for an effective date in the one-year look-back window under 5110B2.
But the question is, nobody's saying that they have no duty to assist, the duty of assist didn't apply. Isn't the question here, and I think this is Judge Lurie's point, whether or not under the circumstances in this case, it had a duty to assist?
No, Your Honor, because what happened in this case was is that the board did not consider or apply the applicable statutory and regulatory provisions. They didn't look to that one-year look-back window at all. And what Mr. Baxendale argued to the Veterans Court is that in demonstration of the need to have considered and applied those specific provisions of law and regulation, there was a regulatory imposed duty on the part of the VA to develop facts pertinent, and that the remedy for the board should have been to send this matter back to the VA to do its regulatory duty under 103A.
So you're saying you're seeking that they order them to what? Develop facts pertinent.
Develop facts pertinent.
And this circumstance consists of a retrospective medical duty.
That's right, because there was conflicting evidence in the record about employment in that one-year look-back window as to whether or not there was a worsening of his condition, and in this case, whether or not he qualified for a total rating based upon the fact that he wasn't working.
And are you suggesting that the Veterans Administration would not have the discretion to determine whether or not they thought a medical opinion was too speculative under these circumstances?
Well, that's really not the issue in this case, Your Honor, because there was no exercise of that duty. It wasn't a question of whether they did or didn't have the discretion. The board had an obligation to consider and apply the one-year look-back provision of the statute and the regulation. And the board did not apply that statute or regulation. And in furtherance of that argument, Mr. Baxendale attempted to explain that one of the ways that they could have applied that regulation and statute was to provide a retrospective medical opinion because of the conflict in the evidence. There was a Social Security Administration.
And they said no, because it's far too speculative under these circumstances. What's wrong with that?
Because that doesn't go to the consideration of the applicable statute and regulation. It's a post hoc rationalization for why they chose not to consider and apply an applicable provision of law and regulation. What happened here is that Mr. Baxendale sought an increase in October 1993. In fact, he had an inferred claim for increase back to August of 1992, which the board eventually found to have occurred. Where the VA dropped the ball was then in looking at the one-year look-back window under the statute and the regulation and affording him assistance. Then they come in and say, well, in mitigation of our failure to correctly apply or consider and apply the appropriate provisions of the law, we were simply exercising our discretion that it wasn't necessary. They can't use that post hoc rationalization, that litigation position, to justify the board's failure to comply with its obligation to consider and apply all provisions of law, and then ultimately goes to the question of the VA's duty to assist Mr. Baxendale when there is a conflict in the evidence. There was no attempt to resolve the conflict in the evidence where the medical records indicated that he was employed, but employment alone is not a bar to the 100% schedule rating. It's a question of whether or not that employment was or wasn't substantial gainful employment, and whether that unemployability resulted from his service-connected disability. The board simply gave short shrift to the fact that, well, yes, there's Social Security. He was totally disabled under Social Security from February 1991, but we don't have to consider that because there were other conditions that he was disabled from. But that's why the duty to assist exists. The necessity for the VA to assist the veteran in developing facts pertinent to the claim. And the very narrow claim here, which happened when the VA decided that, when the board decided that there was an informal claim for increased compensation in August of 1992, was then to assist the veteran in looking back for 1 year. And that information was clearly available in the record and should have been recognized by the board as an omission on the part of the VA in developing facts pertinent. Because what they did was to simply look at the evidence and say, well, we don't think that there was a need because it's too remote. But it's really not a question of remoteness. It's a question of assisting the veteran to go to the real question under the statute. The question under 5110B2, the language is, the earliest date as to which it is ascertainable that an increase in disability had occurred. But if you don't ever ask the question, if you don't ever develop facts pertinent to that question, and in the case of the...
So you're saying that a retrospective medical opinion is required in every instance where we're talking about a one-year look-back? Or what are you asking for? You're saying that the VA at least has to think of whether or not they should have it, and if they decide it's too speculative, that's fine too.
That's right. And then the burden would shift to the veteran, as was suggested by the Veterans Court, to come forward with that evidence. If the VA isn't going to assist them and they make a judgment that we don't need to assist you, then the burden does shift to the veteran to come forward with that evidence. But the obligation in the first instance, under their own regulation, should be the VA.
But Mr. Carpenter, is that the decision that was made by the VA that additional evidence was not necessary?
No, I don't believe they ever reached that question, Your Honor. I don't think they ever considered the one-year look-back window, and that's what we challenged the board's decision on that affirmed the assignment of the effective date of August of 1992. That was the question that was presented to the Veterans Court, and in support of that, we argued the breach of the duty to assist in that one-year look back. The explanation that they gave to the court was, is that it wasn't necessary. I don't believe that was a decision that was ever made by the VA in the first instance.
So if it was made, then it would be a decision made by the VA, it would be a question of fact that we really couldn't even look at.
Oh, that's absolutely correct. But the question here is the interpretation of the VA's regulatory duty to assist on 3.1.
Well, we can also interpret the issue as whether or not it's a question of fact that the VA considered and rejected.
Well, I'm not sure you could get to that in this case, Your Honor, because the issue presented below was whether the board failed to consider or apply the applicable statute and regulation 5110B2 and 3.4002. And the evidence, I think, is clear that they didn't. And as a consequence, the Veterans Court should have vacated that decision and ordered them to have at least considered and applied it. And then that's when that factual determination would have been made. I say that I'm over all the time. I'll observe that.
We'll save it for Mr. Carpenter. Mr. Chairman, is this a duty to assist case or a statutory interpretation case, or is this a fact case regarding a medical examination?
This is a fact case involving a medical examination. And
we need any more time?
That's entirely up to you, Your Honor, but if you don't mind, I'll take a few moments before signing.
Take 15 minutes.
Thank you. The court has it exactly right. The Board of Veterans Appeals in this case determined as a matter of fact that Mr. Baxendale's request for a retrospective medical examination would have been speculative, was not relevant, would not aid in the determination of his claim, and that the record was otherwise sufficient to permit adjudication of his claim. Given those facts, Mr. Baxendale must convince this court to take one of two steps in order to obtain reversal. Either he must convince the court to re-examine those facts, which the court plainly designed jurisdiction to do, pursuant to 7292, or he must convince the court that 38 CFR 3.103 creates an obligation on the part of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and that obligation is so broad as to require a medical examination where it would be speculative, irrelevant, and would not be substantial likely to.
But in this case, is he right or wrong? As I understood it, maybe I misunderstood, that the VA did not make that determination. That's a threshold matter. They did not, so they didn't say, no, we're not giving him so much respect to medical examination.
They did, in fact. That was determined at the board and upheld by the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. And in fact, they used those words. They said that it was speculative. They said that it was not reasonably likely to aid in substantiation of the claim. They said that it was not pertinent. So even if we were to find an obligation under 3.103, or it enters a specific factual finding that additional pertinent obtainable evidence was not available. So the board called it all of those things as a matter of fact.
One of the things that disturbed me about the government's position here is that you argue, as I think the board and the CMC also did, that the reason they were off the hook to provide some retrospective medical exam is because the Veterans Administration had sufficient evidence in the record to establish what the trigger date.
That's
in other words, because you had some medical exam saying, as of August 17th, this person had this disability, that gets you off the hook for determining whether or not he had a problem before that. That makes no sense to me. If I have the flu, if Dr. Gallarza tells me I have the flu as of September 1st, that doesn't inform at all the question of whether or not I have the flu on August 1st as well.
That provision is specifically in 5103A2C, I believe, says that 5103AD2 governs when the duty to assist includes the requirement for medical examination. And A2C says that it's only one of the criteria is that it's required where there's not otherwise sufficient facts in the record to permit adjudication of the claim. And in this case, there would be progress notice of Mr. Baxendale, who was his doctor's memorandum as of August 17th, or progress notice prior to August 17th. It just didn't contain any information that indicated that his condition warranted a greater than 50% rate.
Mr. Chairman, let me interject. As you know, and Mr. Kaufman knows, we know that this is a tells the audience that by statute we have no jurisdiction over facts or application of law to facts. And so that sort of sets the divide in this argument here. Continue.
That's correct. And that's exactly what Mr. Bassendale has left to work around. The board was very clear about its factual findings with respect to whether medical opinion is warranted, retrospective medical opinion is warranted in this case. And there's just no, there's no way for Mr. Bassendale to work around that. Can't change the facts, and 3.103A doesn't deserve such a broad interpretation as to permit the requirement for retrospective medical opinion.
Does the government agree that in some circumstances they may evaluate it and say that a retrospective medical exam is not too speculative?
That's possible, and that would depend on the board's factual findings, but and it could also depend on its findings in light of 503A, both under D2, the provision relating to medical examinations, and also consistent with 503A2, which doesn't require the VA to perform any sort of, to provide any sort of assistance that isn't reasonably likely to aid in substantiation of the veteran's claim. So if in a certain set of circumstances, a veteran were to satisfy both of those provisions, it's possible, but again, that would be a factual finding or a board.
Is that a legal determination or a factual determination made by the VA?
That's a factual determination. And in fact, this court in Gull versus Principi said that determinations under 503A and B are factual determinations. And VACB has stated that with respect to, D2C, that's factual determination as well. That case was implied.
Well, hypothetically, if the veteran had asked for an additional medical examination, would that be part of the duty to assist in establishing the claim?
Again, if it satisfied the conditions of 503A2, it would be. 503A2 sets out the VA's duty to assist under particular circumstances, and where the circumstances are such that the record reflects that the veteran has a present disability, that there's an association between present disability and the veteran's military service, and the record is not otherwise sufficient to permit adjudication of the claim, then the medical exam is required pursuant to 503A, the general duty to assist.
But if they determine that the medical evidence is sufficient, then it's a factual determination at that point.
That's right.
But what if the veteran asks for a medical examination saying the evidence that you have is insufficient?
That also is a factual
determination. The VA refuses to provide an additional medical examination.
That's also a fact determination on the part of the board. That is the board's sort of, it would be up to the board to determine whether, as a factual matter, the record did actually consist of evidence that would permit the board to adjudicate the claim.
Or the veteran would be able to get his own medical examination at his own cost. That's true.
It simply would fall within the VA's duty.
So it would pass off the cost of the veteran.
That's correct.
Rather than establish his claim. Is that really a violation of the duty to assist at that point?
Well, no, it's not under 503A2. I mean, that's what Congress, those are the circumstances in which Congress said specifically that a medical exam is required. Beyond that, VA doesn't have a statutory obligation to provide a medical examination. So to the extent there is a cost shifting there, it's a cost shifting that Congress explicitly provided for. I just want to address 2 points that Mr. Carpenter raised as well. Even under 38 CFR 3.103, there is no duty upon the VA to, well, there's no duty at all. It's 3.103 does not create any obligations on the part of the VA. It's a narrow statement of policy. But even if there were, it's a duty to assist the veteran, not a duty to develop facts. It's a duty to assist the veteran in developing facts.
Well, that's rather short-sighted. What does that duty to assist mean?
Just that?
Not to develop facts, to support the claim.
Well, it's a duty to assist the veteran in developing facts. So there has to be some basis for the VA to do that. In fact, in Hilger, which is cited in our brief, the court, the veterans plan specifically said that the duty to assist is just that. It's not a duty on the part of the VA to approve the claim. It's the duty to assist the veteran in collecting evidence. So where there's no basis in the record to believe that a particular act of assistance would change the outcome of the case, then it's not required under Gilbert.
And the VA has unreviewable discretion to make that determination, or reviewable by the board, but not by the person.
In any particular circumstance, it is a determination of fact that is within the board's discretion. That's right. If the court has no further questions, we have to back to the request that the court.
No one is ever penalized for failing to use all this time. Nor does he get benefit.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear from Mr. Carpenter of the Republic.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. At page 57 of the joint appendix, which is the board's decision, the board acknowledges that the veterans representative, myself, requested that the board remand the case in order to obtain a retrospective medical opinion to determine whether it was factually ascertainable that the veteran's symptoms had increased in severity in the 1 year prior to the informal claim in August of 1992. The board specifically declined. Now, what's important here is that the VA never made any effort at assistance. And when on appeal the question was raised about the VA's duty to assist, they relied, as the government has now relied, on the limited authorization of the statute. And I believe that the government has correctly articulated the VA's position here, which is that Congress has now told us that we only have to do a little assistance. And we really don't have to give the full, broad statement of policy that exists in 3.103A to develop facts pertinent to the claim.
Well, do you disagree with the statement that follows the one that you read, where they say a decision on the claim for an earlier effective date may not be based on a resort to pure speculation or even remote possibility?
I agree with that statement as a general proposition. However, that is not the exercise of the duty to assist by the VA. That is a determination by the board in the first instance, and it is our view that the obligation under 3.103A imposes that duty on the VA in the first instance. And that's why we ask the board to send it back to the VA to do their duty to assist in the first instance. As you said.
So the remedy you relief you get here is that we'd send it all the way back through the pipeline to the Veterans Administration. They presumably say the same thing you're saying here. It goes up to the board. We know what the board is going to do. They've already done it.
Well, actually, no, I think it's far more important than that, because what this court does that is frankly different than the court below is to interpret what the VA statutes and regulations mean. You've just heard the government tell you that 3.103A isn't about the duty to assist. It's only a statement of policy, that it really isn't the imposition by regulation of their duty to assist, that they have no obligation to assist, even when requested. And quite frankly, that is an absurd position, and a position that is in direct contravention to the consistent congressional history of the expectation on the part of the Secretary that the Secretary is going to help the veteran in the first instance. And there is a very narrow window that is at issue here. And if this court permits the VA to sustain a position that the interpretation of 3.103A is merely a statement of policy, then the Secretary gets off the hook. Then, in fact, there is no real duty to assist except as narrowly defined under the statute. And that would simply be catastrophic to veterans because, as has been suggested, it is unfair to shift the burden to the veteran, which is precisely what the Veterans Court did. The Veterans Court wanted Mr. Baxendale to come forward with evidence in the first instance, and that puts the proverbial cart in front of the horse. And the horse here is the VA. It should be assisting the veteran to develop facts pertinent to the claim, as stated in 3.103A. I don't believe I have anything further unless there's further questions. Thank you.
Dr. Lynch, take the statement on the Bible.